We have inside the studio one new guest, one old guest. And I guess they're all type of old and the new. So let's start with the new, because the new is always good as well as the old. Good day, and I want you to tell the listeners of CHRY News Now your name and what it means, because name are important to its meaning.
Right, my name is Crewman Nelson. I am the leader of the Tivoli Drummers. Of course, we are here since yesterday, we coming out of Grenada. And we're here for mainly two reasons. One, to participate in the Mutadi International Drum Festival that is on Saturday and Sunday down at Queen's Park. But also, most importantly, probably more importantly, we are doing a major show on the 11th of June right here at the Driftwood Community Center. And yes, that will be Saturday at 6 p.m. My name is Kruma, as you ask. Actually, take out of Kwame Nkrumah, one of the foremost leaders in the revolutionary movement to liberate Africa. And so instead of carrying the N, I dropped the N to show a relationship with my ancestors of the mainland.
Okay, and we have the old, good day old man. Come close to the mic. How are you doing, old man?
Pretty good, Sankofa. This is Baba Yaya here.
And you know, some people didn't know of your Baba Yaya. So what were you before you came Baba Yaya?
Well, Baba Yaya was given to me by my granddaughter, which means to serve, because she liked the idea that I really take care of her, Imani. So
that's a smart girl.
Yes, yes.
So you're here drumming. When did this invade the psyche of your family? And we'll start with the old. When did drumming became part of your life? The earliest memory?
Earliest memory, I say, maybe when I was about 5 years old, recognizing the, you know, my father, Limo Pipey Joseph from Grenada, being he and his brothers, you know, were very, you know, master drummers in the village of Tivoli, and being around them and, you know, experiencing, you know, the whole family just drumming in the night and in, you know, different occasions, you know.
Yes. Was your smaller, younger brother Barnett when you were five?
No, man. He's just, you know, I've been thinking about being conceived.
Yeah. So when you got conceived, you came on the scene and you saw your brother. And who else was drumming at that time?
Well, there is a slogan. We have a T-shirt. It marked Drum in My Blood. Drum in Me Blood. It means that I was born with it, you know, it is encoded in my genes. So, growing up, I, you know, my father died when I was quite early. So Renwick had more opportunity to be immersed in that sort of drumming culture. But for me, he died when I was only five.
Ah.
But I can tell you the genetic coding remains so strong.
So who is the better drummer now? And you go with the older brother first. Because, you know, I hear that he has a group, you have a group. Who is the better drummer?
Well, I'll give the kudos to Kruman. He's more in tune with it because, again, being in Grenada and in the Caribbean, you sort of more entwined it. In Canada here, you have a tendency to so many different things confusing your mind.
Distraction.
Yeah, distraction. So he's really more professional and more disciplined in terms of what they do in Grenada than, you know.
Yeah, you younger brother don't need to answer. The older brother has spoken. But you want to talk, see?
Yeah, but you see, I think what we have, both of us have, rather than, you know, who is better, is that he has the passion and he has what it takes to give all vent to the drum experience or to that. So I don't know in terms of who is better, but I think we both have it really, really intact.
Yeah, because it wasn't really a question. I was just trying to see how, you know, to answer it. Because in drumming, you just share.
Right, exactly.
There's no really competition, even when somebody is judging it. Because drumming comes from the inside out, right? So that's a beautiful thing. But I know the older brother would give me a good answer, and I know he was going to do that because that's how he is. You're here in the city. How many people did you travel with to Canada?
This time it's just eight of us.
I mean this time. Another time you brought more?
And we came here at a different occasion to perform at the Mutadi Drum Festival in 2004. But right now we are here with just eight of us. This time our group is, the number is basically 13. So there was a hard decision, but all of us were not able to come this time, you know, come here to Toronto. But I can tell you, what we are here, we have been able to work hard to make up for those that are not here. So I heard earlier on you were playing a clipping. I can tell you exactly what you heard. You're going to get it at the Driftwood Community Center on June 11th, starting at 6 p.m.
Now, Drum Theatre Togetherness, will they be doing anything with Tivoli Drummers?
At the moment, I sort of kind of reserved that because I wanted to showcase Tivoli Drummers in almost 2.5 hours of solid, presentation and performance. So Drum Theatre is basically on the sidelines, maybe just trying to help them, you know, to organize and make sure that they have a successful, you know, show.
I, unfortunately, I'm have to disagree publicly on the radio. You can't have one drumming from family coming from home, one drumming family here, and you say, I don't care if you go on the stage one time or two times, but there has to be a meeting of drummers, and I know you're going to agree.
I agree. Even if it's for 3 minutes or 5 minutes, they are going to put on something. They are going to be there.
So Drum Theatre Togetherness, I know Baba Yaya didn't tell you, but you better get ready. Get your drums tuned up. You're going to have the event at Driftwood Community Center. Mm-hmm. What is that about? Like, what should people come and expect?
Well, maybe I should speak to that, because since the Tivoli Drummers would be the group that is actually carrying the bulk of that presentation. Now, Tivoli Drummers is involved in what we call choreographed drumming.
Yes.
Choreographed drumming is about movement, synchronized movement, while you maintain the rhythm that you're hearing. So, actually, you might be hearing something that sounds good, but you are also able to see movements, synchronized, coordinated movement. So, that is called choreographed drumming. But also, we have what we refer to as traditional drumming. And this is drumming that dated back for more than 500 years, coming out of the mainland. We have been able, to a sense, to package it slightly different, because the traditional, another word probably for the traditional that we can use interchangeable is the village drumming, whereby everybody come together and, you know, there is no formal setting. One person touch the shoulder of another, the drummer get up and the next drummer take his place. And the same thing happened with the dancers. And usually use this circle to ensure that the spirit force stay within. But what we have been able to do, maybe for want of a better word, is to slightly corrupt the culture. So we have been able now to put it in such a way, to package it and to put what the most of what we inherited before onto the stage. So we can display that onto the stage. So we also have that. But we also focus a lot on what we call creative drumming, whereby we do drumming where we have section, call and answer, and we have various parts responding to all the other parts, and interchangeable movements within the drumming, not just choreographed in terms of synchronized movement, but interchangeable. And of course, we have dances. We have some real powerful dance movements that we have created also, but what we were able to inherit for the last 500-600 years. When you come to a Tivoli Drummers performance, you get the whole works. We have been able to do, we have poems, we have poetry, we have calypso that we have done. So in terms of the repertoire, we can go for 2.5-3 hours nonstop.
And not bore the audience.
I'm telling you, if you bore for 5 minutes, your money back.
Well, did you hear? We have some boring people in Canada. So if you manage to bore them, they're going to be taking back their money.
Of course.
Let's talk Africa for a second. You keep talking about 500 and 600 years. Have you had the opportunity, both of you can answer, of going to the motherland and feeling the drum vibrations out of her bosom?
I have never been to the motherland. I have met many groups that came out of there. I have done research in terms of the similarity, in terms of what we have inherited in Grenada, the drum in of West Africa. But to be physically there, I have never been there.
Okay, so your brother will take you next time. You've been there?
Yes, Sankofa. I've been, went to, in 2009, I went to Ghana, Benin, and Togo. It was organized by Ian Sumo. And yes, I did experience the drumming out there. I did experience all in the culture of, you know, the three West African countries that I visited. And, you know, it was an eye-opener to me. And I think I shared my experience when I came back with you in a sort of private situation. Yeah.
Well, it's important that the drumming reach you. So how difficult it is to have a 13-member group in terms of traveling, expenses and all of that? Is it a challenging thing for a group such as that?
It is a challenge because we're coming out from a country that lives on the margin of the metropole, live for always the first world, second world, third world. So it's always difficult to come to a place like Canada where the ticket cost is extremely expensive. So that was one of the deciding factor in terms of the numbers of persons that we can come. But Tivoli Drummers have been, I must say, well organized. You know, we are very well organized. And what our organization has been doing is basically saving. So from performances, et cetera, we've been saving and consolidating ourselves. So when the time comes for events like that, we can dip into our own pockets and come up with our fees to pay our tickets. And that is what has been done. So right, we have no sponsors, but we perform a lot. We reach a level where we basically consider to be a professional organization, extremely entertaining in Grenada. Any big event that happens, we are called upon to perform. We have never disappointed those that have hired us. So we are always referred again. And so for us, that is what make the difference for us. So yeah, it is challenging, but we think the experience is worthwhile and the effort.
I'm going to throw out, like, words now, names and stuff and places, and you could just say what comes to your mind. New Jewel Movement, Maurice Bishop and Comrades.
There's a whole new facet that we're going into. Well, Maurice Bishop, the Revolution. New Jewel Movement, 1973, came together, the Jewel and Mop, to form the New Jewel Movement, out of resistance for mainly colonialism. I think that movement itself had led to a lot of opening or awakening of consciousness among the Grenadian population. There was some negativity in terms of some of the repression that took place. I think what we are fighting here on a more psychological and spiritual level is the same struggle that we're fighting with the drum. What we do here, we do in the drum, but what we are trying to do is to create or to make accepted the drum culture. I want to say that because you hope my page maybe that I can speak hours on that. Basically, the drum culture is the many facets for me that embraces those things that link us, that identify us, that is authentically and indigenously us as a people. So the ring games that we inherited in Grenada, the Saraka, the Shango, I don't know if you're familiar with that, the practices that were inherited, we embrace it as the springboard for our expression. And that, to me, have us totally grounded. The revolution created a semblance of that. For me, it didn't go all the way because the revolution eventually pit us with one power against the other power. Yes, we fought against the present colonial master, but then we later on inherited the next colonial master, be it the East, or be it the West. They were all looking in terms of consolidating the old power. And I say, for us, with the drum culture, the power is within us and no one else. So the unification, the fight for our identity, to be called what we want to call. My name changing, for example, is embracing what I call the drum. For me, my struggle is bigger than the revolutionary struggle that was perpetuated by the Maurice Bishop New Jewel Movement. But again, that was an opener and a stepping stone for a lot of persons.
Yes, from one Tivoli Drummers going to Tivoli Gardens, is that a possibility in the future? Will you call the government of Jamaica Mr. Goldberg, or they call him Bruce Golding, for that trip?
I don't know if I want to meet Cook.
No, he's gone. You don't have to meet him. He's in the U.S. But the reason why I said that, the people of Tivoli Gardens, I myself, like, I mean, I've probably passed there a few times. You know, where I live, they say it was the People's National Party area. Mm-hmm. And you don't tend to go into another, you know, JLP's the Jamaica Labour Party, and they call them Labour Right or Labour Wrong. And you have the People's National Party, so we never really go there much. But as an artistic group, you know, I could see where you go down there because there's lots of culture. The people maybe repress the people, but for culture, they're African people. And sometimes, you know, we forget that it's a lot of that African warriorness without the knowledge of Africa that caused those Africans, warriors, and we call them warriors, in Tivoli to go out and fight against the other warriors in Tivoli Gardens and Tel Aviv. They all are warriors.
Well, we always looking for, I mean, opportunities to go to other places. And I mean, I hope it's not a distraction that I just mentioned Coke, where that was just a passing comment.
But seriously,
Tivoli, we inherited the name. There was a revolution in early revolution in Grenada, referred to as the Federal Revolution, 1795 in Grenada. And one of the warrior or general in that army, after they were chased by the English, settled in what is purported now to be Tivoli. So the warrior name was Tivoli. So we got that name from that warrior. But also, we can be in a place like any part in Jamaica, of course, but in Tivoli Gardens, and where we can meet and greet of persons of similar, aspiration, we would welcome that.
No, I think it would be good because right now, you know, before Mr. Coke left, they used to have these parties, you know, and the deal was anyone can come into Tivoli during those parties and leave their car door open.
Mm.
Because the law was, you do not touch anybody's vehicle, you do not rob anybody, you don't do nothing to anybody. So what they said was, this space has to be safe. So, you know, a lot of times you hear the negative things that goes on around people like, you know, Coke and his father before him, Jim Brown.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, unless the governance of Jamaica, which is so corrupt, you know what I mean? So sometimes we can't follow them and say the leaders, these leaders are so corrupt because there are also good things about those leaders. You understand?
Of course.
So that's a powerful thing. I have a couple more names to see. I want to test your intellect now.
Let's go.
The great teacher, Walter Rodney.
Well, I think Walter Rodney, out of Guyana, was probably one of the foremost proponents on that high level that actually helped to open up the door for the acceptance of Rastafarianism, but not just Rastafarianism, but for negritude, the expression of negritude, of black consciousness. I know he was in Jamaica for a while,
yes,
although originally out of Guyana, and he played a really integral role as a professor in going out there in the pinnacle to make sure that became something that is accepted. Because, listen, I was saying that probably the most powerful economic theory evolved in the later century was that of Rastafarianism.
Yes.
We can go into depth in terms of what I actually meant by that, but the whole theory of the economic theory foundation that was preached then was about liberation.
Yes.
It was about self-identification.
Yes.
And the only how you can develop is to using your own empowerment, your own resources to develop. And if you want to do it with your co-oppressor, it looked like today you might make more money, but tomorrow the foundation would definitely go under you.
Yes.
It's a similar concept that was developed later by some aspects of the Farrakhan people when they said, buy us, for us, etc.
Yes.
It's the same concept of Rastafarianism ideology. And if your head is of a different make, I mean, your body would follow, your body would be all confused. I'm saying that to say, in all, man, my brother probably wouldn't agree with me with what I'm saying, but that is okay. Every other nation or people have a head that represent them. You know, the white painted Jesus,
yeah,
white, and so that is their God. So if their God is powerful, because the God empowers them, because they look like them.
Yes.
And if the Indians, you know, if it's Vishnu or whatsoever they have, represent the look, and the Chinese have Buddha and whatsoever, that represent them, but it's only the black. And if your head is of a different color, a different make, you can't, you could never get it right.
If your head is of a different color, then you're dead. your head dead.
So I'm saying that to say that Walter Rodney had recognized that kind of concept, and he was preaching that identification, maybe not as direct as what I'm saying right now, but I think that is what he was.
Well, good. I want to... What, sir?
Oh, I just wanted to say...
Talk in the mic, sir.
I want to say is that Brother Kuma was hearing our vibes and our... Or like we just put it out in the ether, because that's what we were talking about
today. No. Did you hear his name? You don't hear his name.
Kuma.
And Kuma.
He said he left off the N.
Yeah, Nsad or Sajifo. And Kuma. So with those names, you have great responsibility.
And brother, listen, when I hear, you know, just a quick anecdote, use a big word. I buck up in a virgin that went to Ryerson with us, and we start reasoning in the parking lot. And I wanted to shake the brother's hand, really, or bow down to the brother, because it's very rare that you find an African person that was spitting out what he was spitting out. We started talking about Dr. Ben and Kemet and all the philosophy around self-identity in terms of the God figure, and then finances and reaching out and helping Africa.
Right.
For some reason, or people are lost in the Christos ideology, and I'm using the Eurocentric pronunciation of the word, because it is idiocracy. It is ideology that forces us to worship a deity that don't look like us. As you rightfully said, everybody else's deity look like them, but we are worshiping the deity of our oppressor. So I'm really, really impressed that you're spitting this out. Then it seemed like it does not come from Brother Sanko, from Brother Kwame. We all get beat up because we're too black. So, much kudos, brother.
And by the way, they can't beat us up. We refuse to be beaten up. So it's time, you know, the older brother been looking on, so I'm going to throw a word to him too. Come closer. Miss Louise Bennett. Your intellect is on the line.
Yes, the front runner of spreading Jamaican culture and getting down to the basics of what it is to recognize your dialect and be proud of whoever you are and whatever, I mean, where you want to express it, standing up to the wall and saying, this is what I'm offering, and I stand behind it.
Ah, good. This is powerful. Now, I'm going to go somewhere deep. They call these towns Maroons. Mm-hmm. They call them Maroons villages, but it's a corrupt name coming from a Spanish name. Something people say, you're a Maroon, as if the Maroons are somebody separate from African people. They were the free Africans. But the free Africans is me and you. Even the enslaved African is the free African, because we came from that blood. What is the Maroon villages in Grenada? Where is it? And what does it say today?
Well, there is, in a sense, there is no really Maroon village in Grenada. Maroon, let me just take it to different aspects of the Caribbean. At one time, slaves left, or persons were then sent all to places like St. Vincent, later on to places like Guyana, Cayenne, and then to Liberia. They formed the communities, and they sometimes call them Maroons. There's a different connotation in Jamaica, where the escaped slaves or the free slaves now form communities that offered resistance to the plantocracy. And that organized resistance were then referred to as Maroons. In Grenada, because, Grenada is a small island, so there was no enclave, there was no safe place. But what we had was popular rebellion on at least three different occasions within the country. But what happened, though, the activity of communal togetherness, doing things, working together, building houses together, cultivating the land together in Grenada, was interpreted as Maroon. So I'm just saying that there are different connections to different connotations to the various.
And I think the idea of Maroon is African people wanting to be free.
But in Grenada, the connotation is about working together to do things. And I think
self-help.
So yes, but that's what I'm saying. That's African people. Community. Take away Maroons, and everywhere you've been, that's what we did.
But
even on the plantation.
But even if you go back to the teaching of political ideologies as it relates to the various systems. You talk about, they would tell you slavery, feudalism, capitalism, and they would tell you socialism, then communism. And one of the first acts of that political theory or ideology is primitive communalism, which you recognize as the gathering system. Now, that system we refer to as Maroon falls directly in that description of our people working together for the good of the community, because we were basically a community, a communal people. And it is so more than the European, and it probably have to do more with geography. I wouldn't want to place it directly on race because of the whole climatic condition, everything. We were more communal. We didn't fight this individualistic or this selfish war that had to be fought for the survival that were faced by those persons in the colder or in the temperate region. So that was done. That is how it was interpreted. Yeah.
So for the listeners out there, our good guest didn't want to say it, but I'm going to recommend a book to you, Urugu and the ISIS Papers. If you want to learn the psychosis of the European, the Caucasoid people from the Caucasus Mountains, read the book Urugu by Dr. Miramba Ani. She has critiqued the European thought. She has critiqued from Plato to Hitler. And so it's important for people to go and read, go and suss to know what did Europe do when Europe was by themselves.
But we would get back to the German, but let me just also see, as we are this intellectual
jump into
plane.
It.
We are this intellectual plane, that his book Utilitarianism by John Stuart Mill kind of give a certain explanation why people in the climb, in the warmer climb, tend to be more of a social being than those that in the temperate climb had to fight. But also there is a next one, Uhuruna Medelio by Julius Nyerere, who speaks about the African concept of communism.
Yeah, we just went into the melanin and the esoteric sciences just now, because there is differences, right? And before you leave, we're going to sit and break bread.